Welcome to this very special edition of the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton. And joining me in the studio today is Dr. Tim Morrison. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing great, Stone. How are you today?
I am doing well. I have been looking forward to today for so long. You know, a little later in the program, we are going to hear from a gentleman that we had on the High Velocity Radio Show probably as much as a year ago. It was a very informative conversation. We learned a lot about his book. He's got a new one out. I can't wait to dive into that. But we've got some exciting news before we go there. Because, well, you know what? I think I'm going to start referring to myself as Oprah. I'm like, you know, Oprah spun off Dr. Phil. She spun off Dr. Oz. And here Stone is. He's going to spin off Dr. Tim.
Oh, we like that. We like that.
So today's the day that we tell our listening audience that Tim is going to have his very own show.
That's right.
What's the name of it? And what kind of folks are you going to interview? Tell us all about the show.
Sure. The name of the show is Right Here, Right Now. And I want people to see WRITE here, WRITE now. Because we're going to be talking about writing, and not just writing as how do you write a book, but really I'm going to be keying in on business people in Metro Atlanta who have written a book to help them in their business or to expand their brand, or just they realize that they have something unique that they do in their job and in their work, in their business, and they've written a book.
So what compelled you to do the radio show thing? Because you've been out there marketing in other ways and meeting people in other ways. Why a radio show?
My son says it's because I have this inbred need to talk to a whole bunch of people every week somehow or other. And I think he's got that there. I am just fascinated. Well, you know, you brought me in to be interviewed back in October when my new book came out then on Writing Secrets. And then, gee, didn't you become a client of mine? And we've just been having fun talking. And I think it's just a great opportunity to let people talk about how their businesses work and how writing helps them be better in business.
Well, you know, funny how that happened, because I became your client. And this thing is my secret weapon to get me clients.
Yeah.
But I had you on the show and I became your client.
Yeah. Isn't that sweet?
So I think you got this thing figured out.
I like that. Well, the idea, too, is that if people come on and they learn about what I do and how I do what I do, if they're ready to write a second, third, or fourth book, they might come to me and say, you're the one we want to have help us.
And so you're going to interview people that have already written a book for the most part, or are you going to talk to some people that just they feel like they have a book in them and you're going to try to draw that conversation out of them?
I'm going to start with people who have written because they have put the blood, sweat, and tears into it. But I'm also then going, as we get deeper into the program in a few months, I'll work with people who feel they have a book in them, and I'll try to help them identify that and draw it out. I've learned one of the pitfalls maybe of people who say they're an author or writing a book is they've been writing for years. It isn't published yet, but they're still writing.
Right,
okay?
Right.
And so I want people to hear the success stories initially, and then we'll go into those people who have the idea and how we're going to help them get it out there.
Well, I think we're going to have a ball, and with your permission, I'm going to hang out for most of the shows that you produce.
I like that. I may need some hand-holding for a while, so that would be good.
Yeah. Well, you asked all the other hosts in the Radio X family. Stone likes to put his nose in. I'm Ed McMahon on half a dozen shows.
Oh, well, that'll work.
That'll be fun. But we really do have an exciting segment today, and you talk about a success story. This guy's already published successfully before. He's got a new book out. He is the Grand Poobah Chief Catalyst at an outfit called Sales Effectiveness Incorporated. Please join me in welcoming to the show Mr. Carlos Quintero. Welcome to the show, Carlos.
Thank you, Stone. Delighted to be here.
Well, we are so happy to have you back, and we want to get Nancy Sutherland back as well, who I understand is a very important part of your team, and we'll certainly do that. But I have really been looking forward to having this conversation with you. You were kind enough to give me a heads up when you got this new book out. I read it in a weekend, and the only reason it took a whole weekend is because my wife had me planting grass seed on a Saturday afternoon, or I would have knocked it out Saturday afternoon. What's the title of this new book, and what compelled you to write another one, man?
Sure. The title of the book is called Rainmaker, Making the Leap from Salesperson to Sales Catalyst. We think it's going to be an engaging title. What compelled us to write is that as consultants and advisors to companies, we are always observing the characteristics of top performers and what they do, what they don't do, both at the salesperson level, the manager level. And many people ask us, what is it that the top salespeople do? And what we learned was that there was a lot of mystery around it. And many times when we asked the top sales professionals, what is it that you do, they often weren't clear what they did.
They shrugged their shoulders.
They simply said, we just do it. And and so we've been in business now for 13 years as a company, and so we've observed many of the top performers. We've done a lot of research in a variety of areas. So our compelling nature, reason for doing it was, one, to provide value to the industry, to help us in the in telling our story of what it takes to be superior in the world of sales, and also to do some demystifying of what does it take to be a rainmaker. So that's the intent behind it.
And you guys took an approach that I would have found daunting. You know, I put out a little self-published book, you know, 10, 12 years ago, and it helped me get a few speaking gigs. And I essentially just tried to sit down a couple of nights and rewrite my keynote, you know, and that's about what the product's worth. You know, it's a, but you took this on in such a way, describe the way that you wrote this story, because I found that particularly compelling.
Sure. The first book we wrote was called Catalyst to the Power of Five, and it had to do with what does it take to be a sales leader. And we experimented with that idea first, and it was written in a story format, as Rainmaker is also. We have found that the story format is very compelling. We can tell, and we can provide insights, we can provide context, we can provide tips, ideas, and how-tos and tools. But instead of doing it in a formal writing format, we write it in a story format. And that story format has been received well because it reads fast. The reader enjoys it. And then hopefully we create a little bit of suspense of what's going to happen next as the characters explore, you know, their dilemma or their issue.
There's a character in this book named Valerie. And boy, everybody ought to have a little Valerie in their life. Is that your best shot at articulating how you've gone about leading salespeople, or is it some sort of composite of what you've seen in the best leaders?
Well, a couple of things. We certainly wanted to have diversity in the storyline, and so we have people from all walks of life, and we have the story is a storyline of a salesperson, Ryan, who is already a good salesperson, but he finds himself as being average, and he is challenged by what does it take to be at the top of the sales profession? How can I be in the top 5-10% of my company? And he works his heart out, and he's just frustrated. So he turns to his boss, and his boss says, "Work harder, you know, make more calls, work harder." And of course, he's frustrated by that, but that's how many sales managers oftentimes respond, that they just got to work the numbers. And so he then recognizes, he goes to his wife, and his wife gives him some insight of reaching out to this lady by the name of Valerie, who had hired him into the company, and she no longer was his boss. She worked at another part of the company, but it turns out that she had retired, and so he reaches out to her for her guidance, for her guidance and her insights on what really does it take to be a top sales professional. And so as the story unfolds, she decides to coach him, to counsel him, and to work with him. But the beauty of the story is that it's not only Valerie who is coaching Ryan, it's 6 or 7 of the other top performers in the company who have chosen to then counsel him, to be his coach, to be his helper. And so the storyline is engaging because it's how Ryan interacts with both Valerie as well as the other coaches that he knows in the company.
Now, that's something I found particularly validating, and it's consistent with my experience. I find this with people with money, and I find it with top performers. They're some of the nicest, most generous people in the world. And I think sometimes for those of us, and I'm one of them, that have been caught in that trap of marginal performance, I think sometimes we get the idea that the top performers, you know, they've got this secret sauce that they're not going to share with you. My experience really, though, is nothing could be further from the truth. Do you find that top performers are, in general, a pretty giving, generous lot?
In general, absolutely, because they know how hard it took for them to get there, and often they only got there through the counsel and help of others. So one of the ways they give back is by giving to others, but they may not offer it up front. If people are asked, is when they tend to do it. Yes, there are some people who are very egocentric and are not willing to give of their time, but I find that if you are careful of how you spend their time, and ask them judiciously, that they're more than willing to share and give you their insights.
And you're suggesting that these are defined things that people can actually do. versus the if you make enough phone calls, cold calls, or whatever, the percentages will get with you.
The world of sales has been changing over the course of the last 10 or 15 years in a significant way. The internet is an alternative means for people to purchase things on their own, whether it be consumers or whether it be companies. A lot of companies have changed face-to-face salespeople to people on the phone with call centers. And the nature of the sales profession has become much more sophisticated. Just think about it. Out of the 4,500 universities throughout the United States, colleges and universities, there are only 33 who have sales degrees of some sort.
Wow.
And so there's a huge opportunity for the sales profession to raise their own bar, raise their own performance. Traditionally, salespeople always said, leave me alone, let me go sell. You know, and so they didn't want to get too sophisticated. But the world of selling is changing. And one of the ideas that we had with this book was to create a storyline that illustrates the challenge and the dynamics of the new salesperson of the future and what he or she needs to do to be at the top of his or her game.
Well, and you articulate incredibly well in a very simple, straightforward format, I think, this rainmaker model. Can you walk us through that model briefly?
Sure. One of the things that we attempted to do in drafting the story is to think of the different roles or the different hats that you wear as a rainmaker. And a lot of that came through all our research and all our work with clients. And what rainmaker basically espouses is that there are five roles. And the roles are the following: hunter, consultant, influencer, educator, and facilitator. Hunter, consultant, influencer, educator, and facilitator.
No room for agitator? That's the one I'm going to...
That's what you are, right, right, Stone?
Well, that's not nice.
When we tested this out with the audiences and the different people whose advice we followed, they felt that this was very enriching because it's the fact is that some salespeople are very, very good at being hunters, but they're not good at orchestrating the deal, the facilitating the deal once the deal has been made. But the true fact is that the rainmaker, you know, is good at all of them, but it's exceptional in maybe one or two. Or he or she may reach out to others in their company to do some of the other roles, assuming that they feel that they may not be good, for example, in the educator role. They might find somebody else in the company to help them in that, a subject matter expert, for example, that might exist. But this construct of these five roles have been received very, very well by our customers who've read the book and who have picked it up because it provides a framework for excellence for what does a salesperson of the future need to be. And that's what we're excited about, why the story has been received well, is that we're trying to raise the bar, in essence, to professionalize the profession beyond just someone who generates revenue. We want the salesperson of the future has to be all of these roles. They got to hunt, they got to consult, they have to influence, they have to teach, they have to train, and they have to facilitate and orchestrate. And the more they're good at that, then they're seen then by their customers as advisors and not sellers.
And so if you determine or someone helps you uncover the fact that you're not particularly good at one or more of these roles, I get the sense that, number one, you need to own that. And then you got to choose a path. You got to find a way to get better at it and get some additional support, right?
Well, again, you really want to strive to be good at all of them, as I said. However, if there are some roles that you are particularly very, very good at and you're less good in others, yes, you may need to get some, build a workaround or find other talent in the company to help you. Because today, selling is no longer a one-person sport. It's not a one-man show anymore. It's really a collaborative effort between the team and the organization, whether it be the person in the call center who supports you or the person in fulfillment or the person in service. And you... As the lead person, you need to be able to orchestrate and facilitate all of that.
Could you say a little bit more about that? You obviously started out in sales, and you've watched how it's changed over the years. What are some of the key people that a salesperson does need to turn to now? And I'm sure you know they fall into some of these categories here.
In the early days of selling, and this is still is even bandied about today, that selling is all about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I think people do buy from people they know, like, and trust. So that's still a very important idea. But sometimes the nature of the relationship has changed. The relationship can be a financial relationship, a legal relationship, a personal relationship. So a sales professional may need to turn to his a finance guy to help negotiate the agreements. He may not be able to do it all by himself, so he needs the authority and the context for that. Or he may need to reach to the subject matter expert in service to be able to provide an implementation based on what they're selling that is unique to a particular customer. So the best salespeople recognize that they are basically managing many of their resources, including their own.
Okay.
And that's why that's so important.
So I get the idea that a sales manager could really make marvelous use out of a tool like this. I'm thinking if I were a sales manager, and no, it's not likely to happen, but let's just play this out a minute. If Stone were in charge and was a sales manager, I'd love to get a dozen of these books. But I'd want to do more than just hand them out. How could a sales manager use this and really develop his team?
We have had quite a bit of managers already ordering 20 and 30, 40 copies. One company ordered 200 copies for their people. So one of the ways to do this is basically to use it as a guide. You know, one, and a motivational way to challenge the salesperson to think differently, and that's one way that they're using it. Another way is where they have people read it, and then when they have meetings with their salespeople, they'll say, "We're going to focus on the hunter role this month." And so they will then share ideas and have activities and insights and tools that they want to share for the hunter role. Next month, we'll focus on the consultant role. So one, it can be used as a guide, as a motivational context, but also as a framework for discussing. Plus, the manager can use it for recruiting purposes. He or she can say, all right, what distance do I have in my team? Do I have predominantly hunters, consultants, influencers, educators, or facilitators? And all of a sudden, he or she might see the gap that he has. For example, while everybody thinks that salespeople are hunters, statistically, only about 15 to 17% of the salespeople in America are really true hunters. Mm-hmm. Most of us are more farmers or account managers or influencers and educators and facilitators. We like the hand-holding with the customer, and we'll hunt when we need to. But if on the other hand, if it's a brand new territory and the manager says, boy, I really need to find three hunting types, then the book can help you realize mm-hmm. that you have deficits in your team and that you need to maybe shore up your team with the right kind of talent.
When you were putting this together, what was the biggest challenge for you? Was it to identify like the five different categories or what?
The categories, came out of a lot of the research that we've done, plus anecdotal experience, plus research others have done. So it was less of a concern there. The bigger challenge is when you're writing a book that's 150 pages long, is to making some hard choices of how many pieces you include.
Oh, sure.
And so we made a decision that we would include roughly two or three, at least three ideas, maybe four, in each chapter. So by the conclusion of the book, we have a total of 10 different tools that were developed throughout the chapter. So the challenge we most had was choosing which of these tools do we include, which do we not. And considering that we also tried to write in a lighthearted way, we didn't want to get into a very sophisticated type of conversation. Our hope is that one of our objectives is through social media is to now develop a community around rainmaking. We've created now two blogs, one on sales leadership and one on rainmaking. And we hope to be via Twitter and via LinkedIn and via Facebook that we are going to be able to build a community of practitioners who start sharing their ideas and their approaches. So that's one of the ways we want to promote the book.
If I'm following you on this, what you're offering to people is a fun read that they're going to learn from, that they can actually pick things out of it and say, I can do that.
It's the best $15.95 investment you will ever make.
That was a good answer. I like that answer.
That's the sham wow answer, right?
Yeah. Man, that was a good answer.
Considering our normal rates when we do work for clients, that's a phenomenal return
on
your
investment.
That's
a real deal,
isn't
it?
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I want to go back to this social media thing. I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but you seem a little long in the tooth to be talking about social media, but it sounds like you guys are getting some return on that.
Well, the truth is that we have had on our site the social media presence now for about a year and a half with mixed results. We certainly have had people call us as a result, but what we haven't done is establish good focus. And so what we're doing differently with the social media work going forward is that we're going to we've hired a social media company to help us to establish the entire message around these two books, because they're fun, they provide a following, and they provide value. Because what everything that we've learned certainly about social media is that it's not about prospecting, it's about providing social value to the people who are following you, and then in turn, in time, that may generate business for you. But the first reality is provide something of value in a way for people to interchange.
Well, I may be spilling some of the beans because, unlike Stone, I haven't read the book yet, but it's on my reading list now that I have a copy. Do you deal with social media in it at all?
Within the book, we talk about social media and how a number of the top performers are using social media to interact, to research, certainly that many of we have some examples of how they use LinkedIn to find prospects, but we don't delve into in detail. And the reason for that is that, you know, social media tools are coming up every single day, and what we didn't want to do is to necessarily hone in on one, and then 6 months after the book is written,
right,
that social media tool perhaps is out of favor. So we made a decision that we would talk about it at a high level and how critical it is for the salesperson of the future to use it, but we didn't specifically get into the how-tos. Yeah. We think, though, as a result of the online community, that we'll be able to now use that as part of the blogging and the conversation and the interchange.
Well, I like that, because that really gives the book a whole lot more shelf life in the long run, and that's good. But I think, you know, as Stone so graciously said, you look a little long in the tooth, but I'm probably older than both of you guys. But for someone like you and your business to be able to say, we have to look at social media, that's a critical piece.
Well, social media, again, it began predominantly through the personal interaction of people, and Facebook being the biggest example of that. But companies today are obviously all becoming very involved. I mean, we know that social media is having an impact. When Harvard Business Review, you know, I think a month ago, wrote a full article around the impact of social media for CEOs.
Oh, wow.
That's important.
And how many CEOs need to have a social media presence. I mean, marketers have had social media presence for a while, but sometimes the other executives in the company have not. And so the truth is that social media can be empowering, but it can also be very time consuming. So you've got to be careful of how you use the various different tools to advance the areas of focus that you have.
Stone said in the opening that he had you on about a year ago. It was actually in May of last year. I looked it up.
This guy doesn't see there. Dr. Tim does his pre-show research.
There you go. And that book was Catalyst to the Fifth.
Catalyst Power 5, huh?
Yeah. And you've got five categories in this. And you mentioned earlier that you hope to develop the dialogue between the readers of all your books. How do your two books work together?
Well, they're somewhat in a similar context. What we did with Catalyst to the Power of Five was research the best practices of the sales manager.
Ooh.
And we concluded that there were five roles there: leader, business manager, coach, recruiter, trainer. So in that context, is similar to Rainmaker in that we talked about what does it take to really be a sales leader, a top-performing sales manager, as opposed to a top-performing salesperson.
Because they really are different.
Yes, and what happens in many companies is that the great sales guy like Stone may get promoted to become a sales manager, and all of a sudden he's not a good sales manager. And the company has lost a great salesperson and maybe hired a so-so sales manager. The skills are different. And some, you know, the good performers over time figure it out, but for many people, it's a big disconnect at first because they think that they should be glorified salespeople with a title. And that's what often happens. A salesperson becomes a manager, then he becomes a sales manager, and he continues to sell, when the truth is that he has to change his whole approach on how he establishes a vision for his team, he manages the business, and ultimately coaches and counsels.
Now, this book is chock full of tools in the book, but what I loved about it, which I don't guess you could have done even a few years ago, but what's great is it sends you straight to tools that are online. Tell us about some of these tools.
Well, the tools, right now we have 10 tools, and the tools are some are simple, some are a little bit more complex, but the samples of the tools are things like what we call an ABCD opportunity grid, where it helps a salesperson decide where to focus and where to invest his time. Another one is called the fishbone analysis, which is a traditional tool that has been around for many years in the quality movement that we've seen many salespeople use in order to help them problem solve. We've got a whole list of some of the best questions that we've ever seen salespeople have. Negotiation tips. So we've got a variety of tools like that, and our hope is that in time the online resource will build as people will contribute their tools that then can be a resource for other rainmakers out there.
So this is stuff that you've accumulated. Again, you mentioned this at the beginning, but you have done some serious research to find these things and put them into a story that is just good to read and learn from.
Yes, Tim. The tools in the world of sales, as in most professions, there's thousands of tools.
Mm-hmm.
And these are not necessarily the best tools. This is a sampling of tools that we thought were appropriate for the storyline that we were trying to shape. Because every company and every industry may have very specific tools that are unique to them. And so the challenge always is when we create tools is that, well, will this be relevant in the healthcare industry versus the building industry? Mm-hmm. So we try to keep things somewhat high level.
Sure.
So that it could work across industries instead of saying that's not relevant to me because I'm in healthcare or I'm in pharmaceutical sales or I'm in the lumber industry.
I like that. I like that analysis, especially when you said lumber industry, because my dad was a lumber industry guy, and I broke the mold. And I think there's a good reason for it. I think there's a very good reason for that.
You didn't
want
to go into the lumber business, Dr. Tim?
No, not at all. Which one are you in your categories? Which one are you, Carlos?
Which one what now?
Which one of these five would you see yourself as being the strength?
In the leader role?
Yeah.
Probably the coach is probably one of my strongest traits.
Mm-hmm.
I also like to think that from a leadership perspective, you're trying to set the standards and the vision for the company. So that both of those two are ones that I pay attention to.
Oh, that's good.
So if someone is already genuinely a good, strong salesperson, can they benefit from this book? And if so, how?
Couple of thoughts. The best salespeople already recognize that they can always improve. And if the person is already thinks that they know everything, then they're not a great salesperson. You know?
That's a good point.
So number one, best salespeople are always, as Covey used to say, sharpening the saw. So number one, best salespeople can always sharpen their saw by reading the book and the ideas behind it. We think that the book will challenge their thinking, will challenge their methods. Now, we know and believe that anyone can be a rainmaker, you know, a top performer, but most guys and gals aren't willing to often put together the effort and the intensity that sometimes it requires to be a dedicated rainmaker. There was a book written a couple of years ago that indicated that the best performers in their field practice about 10,000 hours a year. You know, and before they get to be top performers,
right.
Okay?
That's a lot of hours.
You know, how many hours that the top golfers or the top violinists or the top musicians practice and practice and practice. So going back, the top rainmakers, just as top athletes, have to do a lot of deliberate practice and not think that it's just natural gift of gab on their own and their ability. And so a key outcome of the book is that if you want to be a rainmaker, you can, but you've got to be focused, you've got to be dedicated. And so an answer going back to your question is that, you know, rainmakers are really learners, and the best rainmakers continually learn. And if they can see this as a way to, if they get one idea or two ideas that can put some more money in their pocket or can help them help others or help their customers, then ultimately it has significant impact.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. I knew that it would be. Before we let you go, a couple of things. I want to make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you if they want to have a substantive conversation around this whole practice of this whole idea of sales excellence. But I also want them to know how to get their hands on this book, man.
Sure. The book will be available on Amazon in a couple of weeks, so it's already been submitted, and we expect it to be up probably within you know, say 2 weeks from now. Catalyst to the Power of Five is already there. So Amazon, and as well as the other booksellers will have it. You can obtain it now by going to our website, which is www.saleseffectiveness.com, and the book's right there on the front page, so you can click on it and order it right there. Our phone number is 770-552-6612. Again, 770-552-6612. And there's no obligation if you wanted to call and talk a little bit about both the book or any ideas that you have.
Yeah, Carlos will read it to you, right? Like at bedtime. Right. That'd be a good service, right, Dr. Tim?
Absolutely.
Like bedtime reading?
Yeah, he'll read it to you.
Well, thanks so much for coming. I'd love to have you come back, certainly with your co-author, Nancy. But I was thinking, Dr. Tim, it might be fun on either this show or on yours, have these guys come back with a client.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
or like one of these sales managers that's using the book in the training. I mean, would you be up for that if we can get that organized?
Well, absolutely. And I also think that there'll be an opportunity to then interview that customer on not necessarily the entire role of the Rainmaker, but maybe on the hunter role or the consultant role.
You know,
pick each of the roles and make them come alive.
He's pitching five shows. You understand that. That's great. You know, what I've enjoyed is watching the confidence and the smile as he's talking. He's in love with this stuff, and that's a sign of a good writer. That's great.
Thank you, Dr. Tim.
He is the real deal. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Dr. Tim Morrison, our guest today, Carlos Quintero, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.